The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Let's bring in John Crown, consultant medical oncologist at St. Vincent's Hospital Group. John, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning to you, Jonathan. Happy New Year.
Many happy returns. I want to talk about what's happening in hospitals right now. You and I have spoken many times over the year, and over the years, and you're a regular contributor to Pat's programme. What do you think is causing what's happening right now, apart from the surge that we have seen in the number of people who are falling ill with respiratory illness?
Well, Jonathan, it has to be said that there are extraordinary circumstances at the moment with the current viral outbreaks, but the core and even really, really top-class health systems would have some level of difficulty in coping with that. So, you know, I have to acknowledge that. But the reality is this is not a new problem. The scale of the problem is a little bit worse than usual. But I was, in preparation for this interview, going back over some speeches I made in the Shannon many years ago, in which I was pointing out how abnormal it was to have a health system that couldn't cope with things like an outbreak of icy weather in a country which brought more people to an emergency department, leading to a cancellation of all elective surgery in that hospital, which occurred in one of our leading hospitals 6 years ago. And every winter, even when we don't have pandemics, we have a problem: chronic shortage of beds, operating theatres, chronic shortage of staff. I had a, thankfully, minor medical procedure done myself yesterday, at the end of which my colleague said to me, no, he said, I'm now going home because my list for the rest of the day has been cancelled. And this is the problem we have. We don't have the beds. We have a very small number of beds per head of population. For basically all of the staff, social work, nursing, medicine, physio, occupational therapy, radiography, all of these, we really are grossly underprovided with staff and with facilities. So we have huge difficulty coping when there isn't a pandemic. I mean, Jonathan, I have, the year before COVID, I had patients who were waiting months and months and months for scans and years and years and years for specialist consultations. So, you know, the problem is there the whole time, and it becomes particularly acute when we have a virological crisis of the kind we're having right now.
If we're told, and we have been told by the department and by the HSE, there was 900 new beds put into the system last year. Where are they?
Well, I can say one thing for sure is they're not empty. This idea that if only consultants came in on weekends to discharge patients, it would fix the problem or go some way to ameliorating it. I mean, the facts, sadly, just don't bear that out. Consultants do come in on the weekends. We're acutely aware of the shortages of beds, and we desperately try to discharge patients. But let me just tell you one other little vignette, Jonathan, which I think is illustrative. If you're an inpatient in our university public hospital and you need a CT scan, except if it's an emergency where you've come in with a colossal head injury or something like that, for most of the scans, which are important, they're urgent, but they're not critical emergencies, the waiting time for those scans can be 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 days, sometimes longer, which means that a patient who you're not comfortable about discharging until you're certain that there isn't something on their scan which would mandate some other treatment is sitting in the bed for all of those days waiting for the scan to occur. And you say, well, why not discharge them? The problem, Jonathan, is that the outpatient wait for some of these scans is 3, 4, 5, and 6 months. So if you have somebody looking up at you saying, I know I need a scan, and you say, well, I need the bed, well, I send you home, because then you're then going to come onto a waiting list of 6 months for a scan. You understand the incentives that people have looking after their patients' best interests. So basically, we're trying to put 2 pounds of ham in a 1 pound bag right now. We're trying to basically, you know, stretch resources which don't exist. We're trying to make people, you know, make one bed do the job of two beds, one doctor do the job of four doctors, one nurse do the job of three nurses, and then people are surprised when the system doesn't work.
It sounds like a combination of underinvestment and chronic mismanagement. If we're not dealing with and triaging, which is what every doctor is trained to do, triage the patients that are sickest most and deal with them fastest. Ultimately, John, are you concerned about the number of lives that will be directly impacted by this crisis and the accumulation of crises over the last few years?
Well, I mean, I think this is a very valid point. And it's hard to escape the conclusion that there will be some people for whom adverse outcomes will occur because of the current emergency shortage. But certainly in terms of quality of life, dignity, appropriateness of care, I believe there were colossal, colossal departures from what would be considered good practice, which are being forced on us by these deficiencies. Jonathan, I'm going to say something which I think will make me a little bit unpopular, but I've got a good skill set for dealing with that. I don't think the system is particularly underfunded, by the way. I think the system is malfunded. I think the way the funding is applied to our our public hospital system does not incentivize quality, efficiency, and equity. It incentivizes waste. And the simple reason for that, and people who have heard me before will start yawning at this stage because I've been saying it for 30 years. If you give a hospital or a healthcare entity an amount of money in January and say, okay, here's what you have, make it last until midnight on New Year's Eve at the end of the year. And it doesn't matter if you see 10 patients a week or 1,000 patients a week, that's how much money you have. Now, if the demand for the services increases during that time, there is only one way to cope with that, which is to increase waiting lists. Meanwhile, the people who run the hospitals, by the way, nearly all of whom have private insurance themselves, of course, this is the extraordinary situation, they are heavily incentivized to keep within budget. Patients who are outside the hospital on waiting lists do not cost the health service anything. Well, in the short term, they don't. In the long term, they do. So there is a heavy incentive to keep people on waiting lists. So when people talk about waiting times and waiting lists and the HSE being a failure of the system, they're not. They are the business model of the system. The business model is make them wait. That's what it is. So there are other ways of doing it. Countries like Canada and Germany, which have, again, heavily socialized health systems, which I'm extremely supportive of, have managed to make them effectively, in the case of Canada, completely single tier, in the case of Germany, largely single tier, by mandating insurance. And that insurance is paid well-off people will pay more for that insurance than poor people. Very poor people will have it paid by the state. It will be free. And I have no problem paying big taxes if it helps support the healthcare and health insurance of people who are not as fortunate as I and others in my situation are. And such a system would be simple to do. And you know, we've kind of done it already for one-third of the population. We have a state-run, government-owned, community-rated, not-for-profit insurance system which provides healthcare to about 35% of the population. We call it private, but it's not. It's VHI. VHI is very similar to what the Canadians call public health insurance. So if we had the vision and the creativity to look at true reform of our health system, which sadly we don't, I thought we did in 2011 in the election, the then incoming Fine Gael and Labour government promised they would look at such a model and then quickly dropped it like a hot potato when they get into power. Instead, we have this Schlantecare, which is basically an attempt to make the British NHS, which, if anybody is going online and reading it, is failing worse than ours is right now.
Completely, but that is a problem of underinvestment. That's clearly what's coming through there, is that they haven't invested enough to meet with surging demand. Can I just go back to what Stephen Donnelly said yesterday?
Their investment has gone up dramatically over the years as well. They have not curtailed investment. I believe, again, it's a pathology of the way that system is funded, but that's probably... Yeah. I'm delighted to hear that you've got a skill in sharing meetings, and perhaps sometime we will try and have a public meeting on true reform of the health service. I'd love to see you organise.
I would love to do that at some point. I'm sure that we'd have a load of solutions that would be happily ignored. Stephen Donnelly said yesterday there's an ask of consultants and appropriate medical staff to come in just for the next few weeks, to come in at the weekends. You're saying that that's happening, and John Crown, I know you long enough to know that you certainly do that, but is it fair to say that all of your colleagues will do that, or there is a certain cohort who will say, I will absolutely not do that. I'm not paid to come in on Saturday. I won't come in on Saturday.
But again, Jonathan, I'm trying to work out which problem is fixed by that. I mean, if they're saying, well, if our CT scanners and our operating theatres work 7 days a week, we can clear waiting lists faster. I think there's a great argument for that. But the problem is there aren't enough CT scanners, there aren't enough operating theatres, and there aren't enough anesthesia machines, anesthesia staff. And as you know, this is not a new problem. 15 years ago, I got involved in a major public controversy when I wrote an article in support of Our Lady's Hospital for Sick Children in Crumlin, and the fact that they were grotesquely underprovided. And as a result, you know, the waiting times for children needing urgent corrective spinal surgery for, you know, the awful condition of scoliosis where the spine gets curvature. At the time, the figures in Ireland showed that the average child at the time of surgery, the curvature was much worse than the European average because they were waiting longer. And the main problem was there were surgeons who were prepared to do the cases, but there weren't ICU beds and recovery beds for them to go into. So the patients who are currently on trolleys, more consultants isn't going to get them off the trolleys, except if they're, and I don't mean to sound flippant about this, except if they're going to provide us with toolkits and ask us to build beds. I mean, and the other question then is it that there isn't the consultant authority to discharge patients in the hospital who could go home over the weekend? Yeah. I just don't see evidence of that.
Yeah, absolutely. The consultants are not the cause of this. I mean, that is blatantly clear.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think...
The other point I'd like to put to you, if I can, John, is and you mentioned this yesterday, and I'm glad your procedure went well, but your colleague didn't have any work for the rest of the day. How much of an appetite is there amongst people who are not ED consultants, who don't spend time in the ED normally, who spend time upstairs in the hospital, to go down and deal with this emergency right now? So if a doctor has a couple of hours because surgeries have been cancelled or procedures are not going ahead or clinics are cancelled, that they wouldn't just row into the ED and help out. Why doesn't that happen?
Well, I think there are two reasons. The truth is somebody like me wouldn't probably have the skill set for dealing with a lot of that stuff. I'd be very uncomfortable assessing somebody who came in with a head injury or trauma or an asthma attack or something like that. These are not things that I normally do without the support of my specialist colleagues. But the main problem is not the shortage of doctors. The main problem is that people are on trolleys. I mean, as I once made a speech in the Shannon, which I said, and I hate to make it sound like I'm criticizing Vincent's, because I think Vincent's is absolutely not an outlier in this. This is the way it is across the health system. I was in there one day and I said, I'd be surprised if this emergency department could pass a fire inspection, never mind a hospital inspection, because the beds were so closely jammed together, you were picking your way between them. And all the consultants in the world won't fix that problem. There were no beds to put people into from the emergency department. And again, downstream, there's another problem. We have patients in the hospital who we believe are medically fit for discharge. And they do have complex care needs. That some of them cannot care for themselves. Some of them, even with family, need professional support at home. They need home care packages. Some of them need nursing homes. And these patients, who are every bit as entitled to be in the bed as anybody else, often cannot be discharged because there isn't a safe place to discharge them to. So you could make an argument that we need more social workers, occupational therapists, physiotherapists. All of these things are in critically short supply. Rehabilitation efforts, a serious effort to get patients to appropriate facilities where they can get care when they no longer need acute hospital care. So trust me, there are a whole lot of slices wrong in this pie.
All right. John Crown, consultant medical oncologist at St. Vincent's. Thanks very much, John, as always, for speaking to us this morning and giving us your valuable opinion.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.